This is the National Conversation with All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Martin. If you happen to adhere to any of the religious traditions in this very diverse country, then you already know this. Religious practice has had to get very creative as the pandemic has pushed services online and forced people to rethink or even do without some sacred practices. Weddings, funerals, coming-of-age ceremonies all have had to be adapted or put on hold. So we thought we'd spend some time talking about that and answering your questions with NPR's religion correspondent Tom Gelton. Tom, good to hear your voice.
Hi, Michelle.
Well, these stay-at-home orders seem to have had some big consequences for churches, mosques, synagogues, lots of religious institutions who really value getting together. What are you hearing? What are you seeing?
Michelle, a couple of big consequences come to mind. Number one, I think it may widen inequality in religious institutions, dividing the haves from the have-nots. Bigger churches, for example, already had a big online presence even before this crisis hit. They actually got most of their donations, in many cases, through online giving. So they're in a much stronger position. Smaller churches don't have that history. They've had to scramble to catch up. Keep in mind, the coronavirus has hit low-income communities of color much, much harder. So naturally, the churches that serve those communities are themselves hit much harder than those that serve prosperous white communities. The second big consequence is a possible loss of membership, I fear. A poll just came out today found that fully a third of regular worshipers have not even bothered to watch online services at all. So if this continues, there's a real danger those people could just drift away from their congregations.
Wow, that's fascinating. Well, let's take some listener questions. And the first comes from Beth in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Her question is about caregivers and people who rely on services that are often offered by or at religious institutions. In this particular case, she's concerned about people who have dementia. And this is her question.
So many of them rely on day programming, such as adult day centers and church-based programs. I fear that the isolation may lead to unbearable levels of stress and potentially unintended abuse.
And Tom, it's, you know, lots of people rely on church-based programs. Do you have a sense of how they're coping now that a lot of these programs have been suspended?
I think it's really tough for them, Michelle. You know, churches and synagogues and mosques often provide a lot of social services, not just daycare, food banks, charity. The in-person portion of all those programs have shut down. Some services can be done by telephone or online, but most cannot, I'm afraid.
And we've gotten a lot of questions about funeral services. Let's listen to two. The first is from Terry in McLean, Virginia.
How will we dispose of the dead who die from coronavirus? Will they be cremated? How will this play out in countries with various religious practices in place that may conflict with our safety protocols?
That's the first question. There is a second one.
What are the burial protocols that families must follow if a loved one succumbs to coronavirus? Do you call your place of worship, whether that's a church, a synagogue, or a mosque?
In answer to that question, this varies a lot from tradition to tradition. For observant Muslims and Jews, for example, a funeral and a burial need to take place as soon as possible after death, ideally within 24 hours. So it's not like you can postpone the funeral. Also, for Roman Catholics, the funeral mass is important. And where you're limited to gatherings of 10 or fewer people, this means that only the imam or rabbi or priest and a few family members can be present. For anyone else, the only option is to have a live stream of the service for people to follow along. And I think there was another question from Mo in Florida, and he writes about how we've just wrapped up Easter and Passover with Ramadan right around the corner. And here's his question.
Growing up, the month of Ramadan has always been a time of social gatherings, hosting large dinners with families and friends. As Ramadan is approaching during this pandemic, I'm wondering how you think that Ramadan is going to be impacted.
Well, of course, to remind our listeners, during Ramadan, observant Muslims fast from sunrise to sunset. And here it's the same story we've seen with other religious traditions. A lot is going virtual. You know, our colleague Leila Fadel has been following this, and she says there are plans for virtual iftars. That's the meal that Muslims share after sunset. Some mosques may be hosting drive-through iftars. There will be online readings of the Quran. There may even be telephone trees where Muslims call to wake each other up for the suhoor. That's the time before sunrise when Muslims wake up to eat and pray.
That is NPR's Tom Gelton. Tom, sorry for the little technical glitch there. NPR religion correspondent Tom Gelton. Thank you so much.
You bet.
And finally today, we've been asking how you're coping through all this. David Peters is the vicar at St. Joan of Arc Episcopal Church outside of Austin, Texas. He told us he turned to Paul's first letter to the Corinthians.
It's a letter full of frustration and emotion and like anger and all the sort of feelings I get when I do Zoom meetings for church. Like, because Paul is remote, he's far away from his church that he started.
For so many of us cooped up at home, the days and hours can blend together. Father Peters is using an ancient tool to break that: liturgical prayers in the morning, noon, evening, and before bed.
These are monastic patterns of prayer that Anglicans use and Episcopalians use to mark the time of the day. And I know a lot of people are feeling like it's like Groundhog Day. Every day is the same, like I'm here in these four walls, and what do I do? And what day is it? You know, that's the old joke. Or I don't even know what day it is. And so this is a way of like marking that time liturgically and spiritually so that we can kind of have a frame, a prayer frame for each day.
For the record, it's Thursday, and if you're here, you made it through today. Thank you for being with us. I'm Michelle Martin. My co-host Ari Shapiro will be here tomorrow to answer more of your questions. Please keep sending them to us at npr.org/nationalconversation or tweet us with the hashtag NPRConversation.